Every time the Blackhawks win this season, you could win big with Circa Sports Illinois. One fan scores a two-night stay at Circa Resort and Casino, and 100 more win a $100 Circa app credit. Don't miss your shot. See the Blackhawks contest page.
Welcome to Blackhawks Live, presented by Circa Sports Illinois. Sports betting the way it should be. Charlie Romeliotis here. And as always, Jack Heinrich is riding shotgun with me. I'm a little excited about this show. There's a lot to talk about in Blackhawks world. But later on in the second segment, I'm going to put my GM hat on and try to project what I think I would have as my Team Canada roster for the Olympics, and whether or not Connor Bedard will be on it. So stay tuned for that. But Jack, what's going on? It's still cold outside, man.
Yeah, it's freezing. It's not getting, I don't think it's coming warmer anytime soon, I guess. I think that's what I heard. So
yeah,
we're buckling up.
I saw that we got like 12 inches of snow last weekend. And I thought maybe that was like the first early wave, but then we got a second wave. And so it's not letting up. So this kind of feels like we are in the thick of hockey season is what it feels like to me.
Yeah. And the snow, it's not even winter yet. I think we have like a couple weeks till it's officially winter and we've got all this snow going.
Well, it's a tough news for the Blackhawks because they were on a four-game road trip, which was in very warm locations in Vegas, L.A., and Anaheim. And so, unfortunately for Chicago, that road trip did not end particularly well for the Blackhawks. And now they have to land in Chicago. I think they landed at like 2:30 in the morning yesterday, maybe even 3 o'clock because of obviously because they were on the West Coast, but now they have to deal with the cold weather back in Chicago and not feeling great about how that road trip finished. A 6-0 loss to the LA Kings on Saturday, and then a 7-1 loss to the Anaheim Ducks yesterday against Anaheim. So the Hawks were outscored 13-1 in those final two games. But Jack, they started the road trip fine. It was a 4-3 shootout loss to the Vegas Golden Knights that I thought the Hawks deserved 2 points in. And then on Thursday in L.A., the first of the two back-to-back, weird, kind of like a baseball-type schedule, the Hawks pick up a 2-1 victory. And so I thought the Hawks were trending towards a direction of being having a really good road trip, and then the wheels just fell off in those final two games.
Yeah, that was tough over the weekend. I think, what did you say, they had a plus goal differential, and now it's negative after just like 48 hours or whatever it was?
Yeah, so the Hawks had a +7 goal differential, but prior to the second LA game, which at the time was third in the entire Western Conference, and then after a minus 11 goal differential, minus 12. So now they're -5 goal differential, which is now ninth in the Western Conference. So their goal differential unfortunately took a little bit of a hit.
Yeah, I mean that can happen when you get beat like that. It was a lot of the post game talk yesterday was with Jeff Blashill was how some of their, I guess, worst performances of the year have happened after a back to back, and I think you and Steve talked about it, and I think the players did too. I mean, it was just a half hour bus ride down to Anaheim, so it wasn't like a crazy travel day either. So. Definitely disappointing. So hopefully they're just taking today to rest and shake it off. And then they got practice tomorrow and then the game. So hopefully this is a good reset for them, because with the way the schedule is, it seems like they're playing every other day. And now they have like a 2-day breather, hopefully, to get things back on track.
Yeah, I think that was the disappointing part about Sunday's game particularly, because I know now the Hawks are 0-2 in the second of a back-to-back. And both of the second games have been total blowouts. The first one on Friday, November 21st, a 9-3 loss in Buffalo. But in that game, the game prior, the Blackhawks had a game against the Seattle Kraken at the United Center, a game which, by the way, the Hawks were up 2-0 in that game, end up giving up 3 unanswered goals. And that was really the emotional swing as far as Connor Bedard not getting the slashing penalty from Ryan Lindgren. He gets penalized for arguing with the officials. Hawks lose in regulation. So there was like an emotional attack. It was an emotional loss. Then they have to travel to Buffalo. They lose an hour because they're going on the East Coast. And so that you kind of understood. Like, all right, 9-3 loss, second of a back-to-back. Hawks were in Chicago, then go to Buffalo. Legs weren't there. But there was really no excuse for Sunday's game against Anaheim because it was, the Hawks lost 6-0 in LA. Then it was a 30-minute bus ride over to Anaheim. So it's not like the Hawks were getting in late. I mean, it was a normal time start for the Blackhawks. So unfortunately, things didn't go their way for Chicago. But I will say this, Jack. I mean, if you look at the last 10 games for the Blackhawks, a 2-6-2 record, which is not great at all. But you look at the NHL standings, and they are 1 point out of the final wild card spot in the Western Conference, but they have a game in hand on two of the teams ahead of them in San Jose and Utah. So, I mean, they're still right there in the playoff conversation, whereas I thought maybe if the Hawks, I mean, you two wins in a 10-game stretch, that's essentially like you're done, you're out of the playoffs. Like, I don't know how you recover from that.
Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. And so for the Hawks, like, if this is the worst stretch that they go through, if they can power through this and get back on track and maybe win, you know, like 6 of the next 9 games or whatever, they, I mean, they're right back into the conversation and right above the playoff line again. And that's what we've been talking about for a while now, is if there is a path for the Hawks to make the playoffs, which again, as silly as it sounds, there aren't a ton of threatening NHL teams in the middle of the pack outside of Colorado and Dallas, who are essentially in a class of their own with 48 and 45 points in the West. The next best team is the Anaheim Ducks at 37 points. So that's an 8-point drop off from Dallas. And even Anaheim has its flaws because they're a young team and they've gotten really good. They have a really good overtime shootout record this year. But as we know, in the playoffs, there are no 3-on-3 overtimes and there are no shootouts. And so if you kind of just go by regulation, like the Hawks are very much in the thick of the race. And even the LA game, like there was talk after that LA loss, that the 2-1 loss, well, should say 2-1 win by the Blackhawks in the first game against LA. Like there was talk, like, is LA going to change their coach? Like Pete DeBoer's name popped up after that, and the LA Kings had to like dispel rumors. And so that's how much, and you have Philip Deneau right now in trade rumors, who's their, one of their shutdown centers. Like it might be a fresh start for him. So even LA has flaws. Edmonton is finally starting to get hot a little bit, but they're still right there. I mean, Utah, San Jose, not crazy about them. And then Winnipeg and St. Louis, they're below the Blackhawks in the standings, and same with Seattle. So there is a path for the Blackhawks to stay in this playoff conversation for way longer than any of us thought, Jack.
Yeah, it seems like if they just hang around it the whole year, like that's a really big step forward for them. It's kind of, we've talked about them and the Bears, how the Bears were the top seed and then they lose and now they're the 7th seed and everyone's like, well, if they don't make the playoffs, that's disappointing. It's like, flashback to the summer, if the Bears were 9-4, you'd be thrilled. That's, the Hawks aren't that far along in the season yet, but you look, they lost those two games really badly, but they're only a point out of the top wild card spot. So they, like you said, they're right there and they're playing the Blues this week. So that could maybe have a little bit more of a big game. The last time the Hawks played them, they put 8 on them. So, it's fun that they're playing meaningful hockey in December. I know it's a little early, but you look at what the last 3 years, you just knew they were done by this point in the season. And now they're trying to figure out their way to get out of it. And this is really their first little 10-game stretch where they're facing adversity. So hopefully, Jeff Blashill and the guys are talking about how they've responded pretty well to the little spurts of adversity. Now it's like this is their first extended look and how they're going to bounce back. But like you're saying, it is pretty wide open, which is nice in the Western Conference. So, while they're finding out their way, hopefully they can do that winning. And it would be fun if they're sniffing around the playoffs here at the end of the year with some big games. And I mean, if they're able to get in the playoffs, that would be amazing in year one with Jeff Blashill and really propel them going forward.
Right. Like if nothing else, the Hawks will be playing meaningful games in March and hopefully April, even if they don't make the playoffs. And I think that's the goal because if you put us all on a lie detector test at the beginning of the season and we said, will the Blackhawks make the playoffs? I mean, I would have said there's absolutely no chance that they're making. I mean, we had Mike Palm on from Circa, I think one of our first shows, and he said the Blackhawks were dead last in the Circa odds to finish dead last mm-hmm. in the NHL
yep.
going into the season. So even the fact that the Hawks are just in the conversation, I think is a huge step forward, but also the Hawks being playing meaningful games in March and April, I think would be a huge win for the Blackhawks. Let's get to the big move that happened today for Chicago, just transactionally, is Sam Rinzell, first-round pick from 2022, got sent to the AHL after we kind of maybe saw this coming as far as this was going to be a path that the Blackhawks, it was going to be hard for them to ignore if Rinzell didn't really turn his game around. And I think the Blackhawks were really hoping to avoid this route because they were hoping that Rinzell could kind of bust out of his slump in the same way that Artem Lefshinov did earlier in the year when Lefshinov had a really difficult first two games of the season, which were on the road in Florida and Boston. Then he's a healthy scratch in the home opener, which was a big deal at the time. Like, it was a talking point because it was like the Hawks, it was centennial season, first home game. It was a Saturday night at the United Center. And then the Hawks are hoping to trot out this young roster to showcase. And the Hawks made a really difficult decision to healthy scratch Artem Lefshinov. And Lefshinov has bounced back in a really positive way. Now, there have certainly been some ups and downs in his game, so it hasn't been perfect, but it's been good enough where Lefshinov essentially went from the seventh defenseman. Like, he's a big reason why the Blackhawks went 11-7, because they're like, we got to divide up Lefshinov's minutes into putting him more in offensive situations and giving Crevier the more defensive situations. But now Lefshinov has been handling top power play. He's on the first unit, or he's on the first power play unit as a quarterback, but he's also on the first, or he's on the first pairing with Alex Vlasic now, which was a change that happened a couple games ago. He's taken a couple PK shifts as well. So the Hawks feel really good about giving Lefshinov more ice time, and whether it's defensively or offensively. And I think they were hoping that Rinzell would be on a similar type trajectory, but unfortunately he just has not looked like the same player that we saw last season when he was with the Hawks for nine games after transitioning from college to the pros. And in the nine games last year, Rinzell had five assists and he was averaging 23 minutes and 21 seconds of ice time. So we thought, naturally you just thought Rinzell was going to take a huge leap coming into this year after a full off season. He knows what to expect. He's going to be the top guy, top power play guy, whatever. But in 28 games this season, he has just 8 points, a goal and seven assists, and his ice time is at 16:31. But here's the ice time by month for Rinzell this season. It was 19:55 in October. Then it dropped significantly to 13:53 in the month of November. And then in four games in December, it's 12:33. So it was getting to a point where the Hawks were like, I'm not sure he's benefiting from just playing 10 to 12 minutes a night. Like, I think he had nine minutes of ice time, I think, in the first LA game. So it's like there's no point in giving him 9 to 10 minutes a night, whereas just send him to Rockford, help him regain his confidence, regain his form. And last thing I'll say to you, Jack, like maybe I'm responsible partly for this because I had really heavy, lofty expectations for Rinzell this year. Like he was my dark horse Calder Trophy pick this year. Like, I wrote a story on WGNRadio.com at the beginning of the year saying, I think Sam Rinzell is going to win the Calder Trophy as the top rookie. And so maybe we just all thought, oh, because we saw him in the nine-game stint last year, and because he was so good, you just thought a full 82-game season of Rinzell, oh, he could put up 40-plus points, he could maybe score 10 goals. But it's not always linear with these young defensemen, and so maybe that was a mistake on my end to keep those kinds of expectations on Rinzell. But I do think this was a tough decision by the Blackhawks to do it, and I'm actually surprised that they did do it, in pleasantly surprised, because I thought maybe they wouldn't want to deal with the headache of having to send their first-round pick that showed so much promise last year to the minors. But it's a tough decision, but I thought it was the right one to do it, Jack.
Yeah, like you said, it seemed like it was coming, and if he's not playing, the big thing for the young guys is playing, and nothing beats a game situation. And if he's just sitting on the bench and not playing, I think that doesn't help him. And if they started scratching him, I don't think that helps him either. So he can go down to Rockford, and he hasn't even been down in the AHL yet since he turned pro. So this could maybe be a good breather for him, maybe a little bit away from the spotlight. He can work on some things. And the Hawks have had some success with guys going down there. I mean, you look at Frank Nazar last year, we talk about a bunch. Alex Vlasic's gone down there and come back up before he became a mainstay. Louis Crevier's done the same thing. And Levchinov started down there too. So hopefully they could just use that as a tool, and it's a one-time thing, because you don't want him going back and forth, because I think that could kind of mess with him a little bit. But you want him to get that confidence back and how he was playing at the end of last year. And if he can do that, playing all situations, probably on the top D pairing down in Rockford, and just playing a bunch and learning and making mistakes in game action and then being able to correct them without worrying about his ice time going down, I think that could be beneficial for him. But it is tough when you have all these high draft picks, and now the Hawks have a ton of these young guys up there, and now Renzel has to go down and leave that core. Hopefully he's able to take it in stride and use that as good motivation with the right attitude. I mean, we saw that with Landon Slagger too. He wanted to make the team, and he battled all the injuries, and so did Oliver Moore, and they're able to bounce back up and help the team. So hopefully he can do that and be back in Chicago sooner than later.
And I think Renzel too, he's going to Rockford in a situation where they're going to really be leaning on him to handle a lot of those heavy, tough minutes, because Rockford got off to a really strong start this season, but they have since cooled off. And so they're looking for a spark, and maybe Renzel can go down there and feel like he can be the guy, and feel like he can deliver in a situation where the Ice Hogs could really use a boost as well. So we'll see how he performs there. Rockford plays on Wednesday in Iowa, so I imagine that's when Renzel will make his first AHL start. Last thing I did see, so because the Blackhawks also sent down Landon Slaggart, as you mentioned, kind of forgot about that to mention that, but Slaggart, I think that one was expected. So the Hawks sent him down on November 1st, I believe it was, because his ice time was dwindling. He wasn't getting in the lineup. But then they called him back earlier than expected on November 12th because the Hawks were dealing with injuries to Frank Nazar. Jason Dickinson was still out. I think Andre Burakovsky missed the game because of an illness. And so that was a big reason why the Hawks were literally down a forward. So they called up Slaggart, and he's been here ever since. So now Slaggart can go back down, play the kind of minutes that they're expecting him to play. I imagine he'll be on the top line, maybe second line, with Nick Lardis. And so we'll see that. But the Hawks did not make a corresponding move. So as the roster stands right now, the Hawks are at 12 forwards and 6 defensemen. Now, we all know the Hawks have been rolling with 11-7 for a majority of the season, I think every game but 2 or 3 of them. And so as it stands right now, the Hawks are going to go back to 12-6. And so they don't really need to make a corresponding move. And typically when the Hawks are on the road, they like to get an extra body or two out there just to have some insurance in case the Hawks deal with an injury or an unexpected illness. And so that's why you saw the Hawks make those moves when they got back from the road trip. And so now that the Hawks are back in Chicago, they don't really need to make a move because they have healthy bodies up front and on defense. And it sounds like, I imagine Nick Foligno will be returning within the next week or two. He was put on a 4-week timeline after he suffered that injury. And so we'll see what happens there. And then last thing I saw, and could Nick Lardis get called up? Like, I don't expect that to happen. I would want him to continue marinating in the AHL, and especially Lardis. Like, I'm looking at the Hawks lineup. Like, where are you going to put him? I mean, who are you bumping out of the top six to make sure that he plays, in that role? Right now, Green and Burakovsky have been terrific with Connor Bedard. Moore, Nazar, Bertuzzi is the second line. Tara Vinen, Dickinson, McCabe is the third. So I don't know who you're bumping out of the top six for Lardis right now, unless there's an injury to the Blackhawks. We got more coming up here on Blackhawks Live, presented by Circa Sports Illinois. Back here on Blackhawks Live, presented by Circa Sports Illinois. Sports betting the way it should be. Let's get into the fun part about this show. So I'm going to put on, here's what I'm going to do. I'm going to put on my general manager hat for Team Canada, kind of predicting what I would do. Again, I'm going to preface this, what I would do if I was Team Canada's general manager or management staff. And then I'm going to put on my coaching hat to project the lineup of the roster that I have assembled for Team Canada. And the reason I'm doing this today on this show is because Team Canada's Olympic Management Group, they are currently in Florida. And today is day 2 of 3, where they're having 3 intense meetings over the course, or I should say meetings over the course of a 3-day stretch in Florida, where they're trying to nail down a majority of their roster for the Olympics. Now, I think the deadline for Team Canada is December 31st. So they still got about 3 weeks to decide and finalize, tinker what their roster is going to be. But it sounds like they're hoping to get about 70% of the roster done by the end of Tuesday, which is tomorrow. And so I'm like, all right, let me, I've always said, oh yeah, Connor Bedard, he should be on the roster, or Macklin Celebrini, he should be on the roster. Oh, put this guy in, put this guy in. But until you actually sit down and try to put together the roster and figure out, okay, where does everyone fit? But also, I've said this guy should be on the roster, but now who am I taking out? And I got to be honest with you, this was way harder than I thought. And so I was really spending some time today trying to figure out who I would kind of put in the roster, where would I put them, power play, penalty kill, what role would I have these players on. First, we did put out a Hawks click earlier today on WGNRadio.com, and we asked the fan, you, do you think Connor Bedard will be on Team Canada's 2026 Olympic roster? And 81% of you that voted said yes. And so I don't know. Okay, there are two different questions. One, do I think he will be on the roster is a different question. Will he be, or should he be on the roster is also a different question. Should he be? Yes. Will he be? I'm honestly not sure about that. And so let's dive in here. But to save time, I decided I'm only going to focus on Team Canada's forward group, not go through the defensemen and goalies, because really we're all trying to decide if Connor Bedard is in the roster, how does this look like for Team Canada? So we're only going to focus on the forwards, and here's the way I'm going to do it. So I pulled up the championship game roster for Team Canada from the Four Nations tournament in February, what the lines were, who the extra was, power play units, penalty kill units, and then I'll kind of maneuver what I think the updated roster should be going into the Olympic roster. So here's the championship roster for Team Canada. The first line was Mark Stone, Connor McDavid, Braden Point. The second line was Sidney Crosby, Nathan MacKinnon, Sam Reinhart. Third line, Brandon Hagel, Anthony Cirelli, and Mitch Marner. Fourth line was Brad Marchand, Sam Bennett, and Seth Jarvis. And the extra forward was Travis Konecny. Now, here were the power play units. It was first power play unit was just absolutely, I mean, this is just unbelievable. Sidney Crosby, Nathan MacKinnon, Sam Reinhart, Connor McDavid, and Cale Makar. Their second unit was Mark Stone, Braden Point, Mitch Marner, Seth Jarvis, and Josh Morrissey. The penalty kill units, it looked like, I believe that this is what it was. First unit was Mitch Marner and Mark Stone. I believe that that was for sure the first unit. Second unit maybe kind of tinkered a little bit, but it was largely Anthony Cirelli and Brandon Hagel. Those are the two Tampa Bay forwards, their connection, which John Cooper is the head coach for Team Canada's Olympic roster. So that's why he wanted that familiarity there. And so I'm looking at this roster. I'm looking at this forward group. And I'm thinking, all right, how do I tinker a roster that would include Connor Bedard, who's coming out, who's maybe not playing as great, but then if I'm taking a player out, which player am I putting in, and what role do I need them to fill? Because you're not gonna say, all right, put in Connor Bedard and throw him on the fourth line for Sam Bennett because Sam Bennett's struggling. Like, no, that's not a role that Connor Bedard is going to play if he's on Team Canada. So that's where I kind of was tinkering with this. There are two underlying factors as well. So in the Four Nations tournament, the countries could carry one extra forward and one extra D-man. But in this tournament, the Olympics, it's a 25-man roster. So it's 22 skaters and three goalies. So essentially, Team Canada can say, we're bringing two extra forwards and two extra defensemen, versus in the Four Nations, it was one extra forward and one extra defenseman. So that kind of helps the planning purposes for the management staff and Team Canada's coaching staff trying to figure out if we need another guy to slot into the lineup at some point mid-tournament, which kind of player do we want for that second, So here's how I would do it. Here's what my first line would be. And bear with me here, okay? I think Connor Bedard would be on my roster for Team Canada, but I would also include Macklin Celebrini, and I would have both of them on the first line with Connor McDavid. So my first line would be Macklin Celebrini on the left wing, Connor McDavid at center, Connor Bedard on the right wing. The second line, Sidney Crosby, Nathan MacKinnon, Sam Reinhart. Now, the Crosby, MacKinnon, Reinhart line, that was a staple for the Four Nations tournament for Team Canada. You can essentially put that as the first line if you don't feel comfortable with Celebrini and Bedard on the first line, just visually if it looks weird. Like, I'm cool with going Crosby, MacKinnon, Reinhart on the first line, and then the second line is Celebrini, McDavid, Bedard. Here's why I can already hear two rookies that have never played in a tournament of this magnitude playing on a first line with Connor McDavid. McDavid's line mates in the Four Nations roster was Mark Stone and Braden Point. Now, Mark Stone, he's a really competitive player, and he's a great player. He's a guy that goes to the dirty areas. He's someone that a player like McDavid or MacKinnon or a skilled player needs to go get them the puck. But he's also a finisher. So Mark Stone, he's a great two-way player as well. Like, if Mark Stone was a center, he would be getting Selke Trophy consideration for how he's played over the years. But Braden Point, he's an undersized guy, but he's not necessarily a complementary player to Connor McDavid. So here's my thinking. If Bedard and McDavid, those are the guys that you can have two skilled players that can skate, that think the game the same way. And then you have Macklin Celebrini, that's like a mini Sidney Crosby, how he's just a grinder. He's a great two-way player. He'll go to those dirty areas. He'll go to the front of the net. He'll compete. He'll stick his nose into areas that he shouldn't and try to get the puck for McDavid and Bedard. And I also think, don't underestimate the chemistry that Celebrini and Bedard might have, given the fact that they're two Vancouver area kids and have trained together all summer long. And so I think they know each other's game well enough that if they did have that responsibility, they would flourish in that role. Now, I will say this too. If this is a lot for Team Canada to be sitting in their marker board right now and saying, all right, Celebrini, McDavid, and Bedard, like, how are we going to get away with this? I'm okay if you want to take the conservative approach and say, let's maybe split up Celebrini, Bedard, or you can say, I don't think I would do this, but if it made them uncomfortable, you can say, Bedard will be our extra forward, and if we need an offensive boost, then we'll put him up in the top six somewhere, and we'll figure it out, right? So that's what my top six would be. Celebrini, McDavid, Bedard, and then the second line, Crosby, MacKinnon, Reinhart, which leaves the third line. This is where it gets really interesting, because now you're trying to think of role players, and I'll get to the power play and PK in a sec. Third line, Brandon Hagel, Bo Horvat, and Mitch Marner. So I'm keeping two-thirds of the third line from the Four Nations together in Hagel and Marner. So they have that built-in chemistry from the Four Nations tournament. But I'm putting Bo Horvat on my third line. I mean, he's having an unbelievable season for the New York Islanders. 17 goals this year. He's on a 46-goal pace. He also has 29 points in 30 games. So he's on a point-per-game pace this year. But how about this? He's winning 57.8% of his faceoffs, which is among the NHL leaders. I think that that might even be leading the NHL. It's weird how the NHL sorts it, but it's right up there. And so if you put him in a third line center role, I think he would flourish. He's a guy that you're going to have on your penalty kill, which I get to in a little bit. And then the fourth line, I would have Brad Marchand, Nick Suzuki, and Braden Point. Now here's where, Braden Point. Now here's where it gets tricky. The Team Canada has already named a majority of their six players on their roster. Cale Makar, one of them. And then the five forwards they've named is McDavid, Crosby, MacKinnon, Reinhart, Braden Point, which four of those guys, don't mind. But Braden Point, interestingly, he's had a tough go this season. He has just 3 goals on the year and 11 points this season. Now, I know he's missed some time as well. I think he's missed 7 or 8 games. He's actually, ironically, returning to the lineup tonight against the Toronto Maple Leafs. But if we're talking about a results-oriented business, I'm not sure. Like, I would be a little wary of Braden Point right now. And so that's why I have him down in the fourth line, maybe playing more of a checking-type role to allow players like Macklin Celebrini and Connor Bedard to do what they do best. And so that would be my fourth line, which leads my two extras. And this is so difficult. One of my extras, Tom Wilson, And the other one is the... who did I say my first line? Brad Marchand, Nick Suzuki, Braden Point. I have Anthony Cirelli in there as well. And the reason why I was confused as to who I had on my fourth line just now is because I wouldn't mind interchanging either of them. So if you wanted to say Anthony Cirelli is in there for Nick Suzuki, I'm okay with it. I think Anthony Cirelli already has that built-in responsibility with John Cooper where he can be the shutdown center, PK situation, play more defensive in a defensive role. So I'm cool with it. And maybe if you want to put Anthony Cirelli on that third line, which was the third line of the Four Nations, so it was Hagel, Cirelli, and Marner, and then you bump Bo Horvat to the fourth line with Marchand and Braden Point, I guess I'm cool with that too. I just feel like Bo Horvat is what he's providing offensively and what he's doing in the faceoff circle. You kind of want him to have more of a higher role for Team Canada if you're really projecting this. And so some of the guys that I left out, which is impossible, is Mark Scheifele, Seth Jarvis, and Wyatt Johnston, who Seth Jarvis was actually on the roster at the Four Nations tournament. Now, he hasn't necessarily done much to make you feel uncomfortable including him, so it's not like he's played his way off of Team Canada's roster, but I just think so many other guys are going that you can bump from the top six into more of a checking role. And so currently the guys that were on the Four Nations tournament that aren't going to be on the roster for the Olympics for me is Mark Stone, Sam Bennett. Sam Bennett's had a really tough start to this season. Seth Jarvis and Travis Konecny. And so in those spots, in those four player spots, Celebrini, Connor Bedard, Bo Horvat, and Nick Suzuki, and then Tom Wilson as the kind of the fifth player for me because you get that extra forward in the Olympics. And so, man, this is so difficult, but then you kind of have to divide it up too, is like, who's going to play power play? Who's going to play penalty kill? And so I'm keeping the first power play the same. If now I'm putting my coach hat on, if I'm Team Canada, if I'm John Cooper, first power play unit staying the same. Crosby, Reinhart, McKinnon, McDavid, Cale Makar. Crosby, net front, Reinhart, bumper, McKinnon, McDavid, flanks, Cale Makar is at the point. The second power play unit is where things get really interesting and where I kind of like was getting a headache earlier because I was like, how do all these puzzle pieces fit? I would go, let's start with this. I would have Celebrini and Bedard both on the second unit and they're both on the flanks. So you see Macklin Celebrini on the left faceoff circle, Bedard on the right. That's where both of them play currently on their respective teams. I would have Bo Horvat as the net front presence on the second power play. Now, he traditionally does not play in that role. He's more so a guy on the right faceoff circle because he has such a lethal shot. But, man, he's so good in faceoffs, and so you kind of want him out there if the second unit is out there. And I think he'd be able to figure out the net front. He probably has actually played that in the past before, but I wasn't able to really dig deeper into what his power play role is. And then in the bumper, you can kind of go two different directions. You can have Braden Point. You can have Nick Suzuki. Either of those right-handed shot forwards you can put in there. And then on defense, you can go a defenseman, like Josh Morrissey was there on the second unit for Team Canada, or you could have Mitch Marner running the point on the power play, which he's doing in Vegas and which he did in Toronto. So you could really get creative there. Penalty kill is where I think the coaches really need to peg their roles because this is where you're going to win and lose games. Like power play, you can put Crosby, Reinhart, McKinnon, McDavid, Cale Makar. You can just put that, you can put them on the ice for two straight minutes and you would feel good about it. But penalty kill is a crucial role if you're a coach. So here's what the penalty kill units I would have if I was Team Canada. Bo Horvat on the first unit and Mitch Marner. So that duo. So essentially, Bo Horvat is in for Mark Stone because Stone and Marner were the top two penalty killers for Team Canada at the Four Nations. So I'm essentially substituting Mark Stone for Bo Horvat. Bo Horvat is a really good, again, really good in faceoffs. He kills penalties. He would be great in that role with Mitch Marner. And then the second unit, if it's not, the second unit was essentially Anthony Cirelli and Brandon Hagel for the Four Nations tournament. So if it's not Cirelli, let's just say you need a guy like Tom Wilson to draw into the lineup and Cirelli comes out and Suzuki is in for Anthony Cirelli. I would have Brad Marchand out there with Brandon Hagel because those two guys can score shorthanded goals together. And Brad Marchand is putting up incredible numbers for a 37-year-old forward right now. I mean, he's having another terrific year. And I don't know how many shorthanded goals he scored in his career, but it's up there. And so I would have those two forwards. Then again, if Tom Wilson draws into the lineup, he also is a big penalty killer for the Washington Capitals, provides some jam. So then you're looking at the roster, and it's like you got the skill, you got the top six offensive guys, but you also have some jam in Brandon Hagel, Brad Marchand, Tom Wilson. And the last thing I'll say, so Brandon Hagel, by the way, he had a rough start to the year. 0 goals in his first 8 games. Now he's got 17 in his last 18. So I thought he was getting to a point where he might be playing himself out of the conversation, but he sure as heck has played himself back into it. And then last thing I will say, so the Team Canada's World Junior roster last year in 2025, they failed to finish inside the top four for in back-to-back years. The first time ever a team has done that since 1981. And they left off their offensive scores, like big-time offensive scores, in Bennett Seneca and Michael Misa in favor of Checkers. And it did not bode well for them. They had 11 goals in 5 games. Now, I know it's the World Juniors, so this is not an apples-to-apples comparison. But if Team Canada essentially goes into this Olympic break, or into the Olympics, and they don't include Connor Bedard, and then they're in the championship game and they lose 2-1 because they couldn't get that extra goal, like they're going to get a lot of heat from their own country for excluding a guy like Connor Bedard and not going for the offensive players. And I'm of the belief too that if you have too many offensive players, like those offensive players are capable of sliding down into your lineup and making and playing penalty kill role. Like Celebrini and Sidney Crosby, like if you ask them to play penalty kill, they would do it, and they would do it effectively. Crosby doesn't do it for Pittsburgh because they don't need him to do it in Pittsburgh. And so that's, you'd rather have those guys, a surplus of those offensive two-way generators, but guys that can score and put them into bottom six roles. You do need traditional roles. Like you need the Brandon Hagels, you need the Brad Marchands, the Bo Horvats to play their respective roles, the Anthony Sorellis. But man, I just think it's going to be so hard for Team Canada to leave off both Macklin Celebrini and Connor Bedard. And if it was up to me, I would include both. And that's how I would do it. I know we are running out of time here. So Jack, I wasn't able to throw it to you to get your thoughts, but I got Celebrini and Bedard. They are both on my roster, Jack.
I think that sounds good. And I think that makes Sharks and Hawks fans happy, even though they are always fighting on who's got the better, young core. So they could agree on that.
I love it. All right, we got one more break to get to, and then we are going to wrap up Blackhawks Live, presented by Circa Sports Illinois. Sports betting the way it should be, next on 720 WGN. Back here on Blackhawks Live, presented by Circa Sports Illinois. Sports betting the way it should be. I'm actually going to stick on the Olympic theme really quick, because Frank Saravalli, NHL insider, is reported an hour ago, and I'm just seeing this, that NHL Deputy Commissioner Bill Daly said that the Milan Olympic Arena is now scheduled to be completed on February 2nd. The first women's tournament is February 5th. So it is they're going right up against the clock. And Jack, I don't know if you've been seeing some of the reports that have been coming out, but apparently the NHL arena, the rink is like 4 feet smaller than a typical NHL arena. Like an NHL arena is 200 foot. This is 196. Like, how do we mess that up? Like, what's going on over there?
I did see that. I did see Frank saying that the smaller ice could benefit Team USA because they're a little heavier. But, yeah, I don't know. I don't know how that falls through the cracks. And then we're talking about it right now. And when's the Olympics? What, 2 months away now because it's December already? Yeah, it seems a little interesting there.
Yeah, we're really running up against, the clock. If, obviously this is going to be the first time in a while that NHL players return to the Olympics. And I think there's this excitement for the league, the fans, to see what a best on best tournament could be at an Olympic, type level again. We know that in the Four Nations tournament, that was just incredible hockey. And it was a different kind of hockey because, well, one, I was not expecting that intensity because I think there was a lot of like, oh, okay, like what level are we going to get to? But there's also fighting in the Olympics. So they had that USA-Canada where there were 3 fights in the opening round of that first game between those two teams. But in the Olympics, there is no fighting. And so we'll see how this plays out. But, you can't be thrilled about this if you're an NHL owner that finally agrees to sending their players overseas to market your sport. And the building is having a hard time meeting its deadline. The ice is 4 feet shorter or smaller than a traditional NHL surface. And there's some concern, I guess, about how the ice is going to be, because they're going to have to play like multiple games a day. And so we'll see how that all shakes out. But, I have my doubts, but, I think deadline spurs action. So, I guess I shouldn't be too concerned. That's going to do it for Blackhawks Live, presented by Circa Sports Illinois. Sports betting the way it should be. Our next show is going to be next Monday, December 15th at 7 p.m.